Welcome to Iteration, a podcast about programming, development, and design. Hello, my name is JP, and I am a software engineer at an analytics startup. Today, as always, I am joined by John.
Hey, my name is John. I'm a software developer, and I'm excited about today's topic. And I also kind of hate today's topic. So today, we are talking about the codeless movement, otherwise known as low code, no code. And this is a big growing movement. And like to say it another way, it's like, is tools like Bubble and AI like GPT-3 coming to take all of our jobs as software developers?
Okay.
So I have quite a bit of experience with this stuff, trying to hack stuff together with founders. I think this is kind of new to you. Is it JP? What are your initial thoughts on codeless? When I say that, what does that mean to you? Low code, no code, codeless.
The first thing that I think of are what you see is what you get, drag and drop, if this, then that, editors. Being said, I don't have much exposure into this world. So my question to you is, like, how do you define the no-code/low-code movement? And like, what does that all mean? What the heck is Bubble? What is GPT-3? I think I might have seen a tweet on GPT-3 recently, I have no idea what any of that stuff is.
Cool. And like, I think it's interesting because in a lot of ways, this is not a topic for a software development podcast because like codeless is not software development in a way, but like there's a big growing movement that this is real software development. You're building apps, you're building custom applications that businesses are doing millions of dollars of businesses on. And there's entire software development agencies now that are doing millions of dollars of business that only use codeless and no code tools. So let me define terms here. So we're not talking about serverless, something like Firebase or AWS Amplify or Parse. We could do a whole great episode on those tools, which are great, which that's like backend as a service, which has existed forever. So it's like, you don't have to build your API. You can just build a React app and throw us your data and we'll do stuff with it. And we're not talking about tools like Auth0 for authentication or Twilio for SMS, which are like, you know, API providers. But of course, like there's a spectrum here. So on one side of low code, no code, you have just kind of a website builder, like a Squarespace or a Webflow, which that's clearly not software development. That's like your friend needs a website for his barbershop and like, great, throw him Squarespace, throw him Webflow, God forbid, even throw him Wix. And like, you can get something up and running and it'll fucking work. It's fine. You'll show up in Google results. You'll probably be fine. But then there's this line of, I need my website to do something. I'm trying to build the next Airbnb, or I'm trying to build the next Facebook. Like that gets into the world in the past. The only way to solve that kind of a problem is with actual direct software development. So like learning to code, writing HTML, writing Python, writing Java, writing something, Ruby on Rails, whatever it may be, and actually like developing. So like there's this newer world of growing codeless, no code tools. A couple of them is like Bubble is probably the biggest, most powerful, widely used one out there. AppSheet, Glide Apps, Thunkable. But if you just Google like codeless frameworks or tools, they're not frameworks. You're not writing code. It's literally like a completely fully hosted WYSIWYG solution to build an app in the cloud. You can go to bubble.io and you can actually like build an Airbnb using bubble.io.
No way.
Like with a designer, and then you like drag and drop it to code logic and you have workflows that trigger, and it's actually really, really powerful. And technically there's no reason you couldn't build the next Twitter on it. Now, it's going to have horrible performance. It's probably going to look a little bit stock, but like it will actually work and run an app. And this space is growing. It's getting better and better. Like, I feel like the last time I looked at this very seriously was about 5-6 years ago when I was like first learning Rails and like figuring out like, how can I build a software startup without having to like get into this whole world of code? Is there ways to do it? And at that time, there was a couple out there, like QuickBase was one I played with and Smartsheet, but like they weren't really crossing that line of actual web app in terms of handling authentication and payments. But these things are handling all that stuff now. And so it's really, really powerful. And I think it's worth us as developers taking them seriously for certain areas. So I'll stop for a second, let you kind of respond where I've gone so far on like what codeless, no code is.
Okay, so how familiar are you with these tools? Because this sounds like not real. Like this doesn't sound like possible, right? And I remember I texted you maybe a couple weeks ago, it was like a tweet about how someone had said like, oh, in a decade, AI is going to be taking over and yada, yada, yada. Like software developers are going to be made useless because of like how crazy advanced technology is nowadays. Or like you're not going to need a software engineer. So like my question to you is like, how far can you take some of these tools if you know? Like if I literally wanted to build an Uber clone, can I, with one of these services like Bubble.io, make an Uber clone such that like you have drivers, you have users, I can hail a taxi, yada, yada, yada. Like, am I able to do those? Like, how crazy can this tech get?
Yeah. I mean, I was talking with one of these low-code, no-code firms about a week ago. So they are like the number, they're called AirDev, and they're like one of the biggest firms doing this kind of development. And he's like, look, you can literally build anything. You want to build Uber, you want to build Airbnb. However, there's a line at which low-code, no-code is so much less efficient than just writing code. There is a point of diminishing returns that it doesn't make sense to solve these things. This is the example I use when trying to think about this. There is people who build working hard drives in Minecraft, like using Minecraft blocks. There's people who like build complex machines using Minecraft's tools. So like, if you think about it, like technically you could probably build anything using anything, like if you push it far enough. But you know, at a certain point, like you're trying to build a Lamborghini out of Legos and like, it just doesn't work. You need to use metal and you need to learn to weld. And so it's like the answer more directly is, of course, it depends. That's the answer to everything on this fucking side. But the more accurate answer is, one, you're going to have a very generic experience because all of these like build the UI automatically from kind of existing components. So it's extremely generic. And number two, you are going to struggle to scale. So not only in the performance of your app, but in the cost of running that app because you're paying for everything in one service. So in the way that you can spin it, if you write plain HTML, you can host it for 2 cents a month. Like it's almost free. But if you pay for Squarespace, you can pay $20 a month. So it's like you have to think about those pieces here. And I will say it is absolutely for internal tools. Like if a company is trying to solve like IT internal collaboration tools, let's say you're like a law firm or you are an insurance company. And I've done a ton of these builds in my day and age for Rails. Like I've built custom Rails apps for like companies to manage, basically like a spreadsheet plus for a company to manage logistics. No way you should write that shit in Rails anymore. Like that's dead. Pick up one of these low-code, no-code tools. You can have like CRUD against a bunch of different data models. You can move them through workflows. And you can even have like the marketing email trigger when you drag that card from one place to another and have that marketing email trigger or process a customer's payment. So like if your users aren't touching the tool, it's incredibly powerful. So if you wanted to start like, you know, a pretty big and like scaled up food delivery. Let's say you're trying to help people, older people in COVID. You want to like figure out food delivery at scale. Like don't build a Rails app to do it. Just pop open Bubble or AppSheet and like build your little app. Knowing like the users in here they're not going to think that you wrote this code. But there is multiple examples now of companies who've gotten to Series A and beyond in funding. We're talking like doing billions of dollars per year running on low code, no code. This is like a very real thing. Dividend Finance is one of them. And they did like in their first year, they did over like $450 million in processing payments for Dividend Finance, never writing a single line of code. It was all built on Bubble. And so like, you know, the consumers would apply for loans using a Bubble form and then they would process that internally. So like it's a real thing. It's a real thing.
To me, that sounds like they just had a good business though. They could have freaking built that on literally anything.
Yeah, you could. And that's the thing. Like, The reality here is the world is spreadsheets. Like what out there at the end of the day, it's all data and data tables. So the entire world, oh, I bumped my mics there. The entire world is literally spreadsheets and we're all just passing data between spreadsheets. Like that's all Instagram is. It's like a spreadsheet of images and I'm following a sub sheet of that. It's like, and so you're right. Like Dividend Finance could have probably, you could argue like they could have done that in Google Sheets. Like it's probably not about their app. And so of course, like you're not going to build the next Snapchat with low code, no code, because the interface is very novel. You have lots of things you have to do there. But if you're just building a basic like CRUD, create, read, update, destroy low code thing, like this is like a perfect thing. And actually I'm comparing it more lately to what Salesforce is or what FileMaker was back in the day. Like I feel like this is the new Salesforce in a big way. Like that's what this is. But all at the same time, if you're a new entrepreneur and you like aren't a great coder or don't have the money for a tech team, I think you should build your first version, like validate your product using something like this. Absolutely. Because it's only going to help you define your product, see if you have market fit, and it's way lower risk. You move way faster, not having to worry about deploying to any server, much less Heroku or anything else.
Yeah, so what you're, I mean, yeah, but like the company that ended up doing like millions of dollars that we just talked about, like that's just a testament that like this stuff works. It's viable. Like you don't need a software engineer to build an MVP anymore. Because most, I think most startup ideas can, you know, be distilled down into like a CRUD app, right? Like most things aren't that complex. You know, I mean, you might have some novel twist on something, but at the end of the day, is it a CRUD app? You know, probably is just a CRUD
probably
app.
Probably is. There's a way to launch a version of it that's just a CRUD app at
right,
least.
Right, right. Like if...
And it's like, that's an amazing way to like figure it out and get your hands dirty and like start to understand the stuff. And as a software dev, I love it when someone hands me a working spreadsheet. Like this is how we currently run our company. Like these two spreadsheets, we need to like build this into a real thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, there's all the data. There's the workflow. There's my stakeholders. Like you can start to understand. It makes the thing real. So that's why I really actually really love these tools. And if you put someone in a design tool only, it's easy for them to like, oh, be like, oh, it has to be a map view. And it's like, well, no, like what's the data? Who's interacting with it? What does it do? And that's what I love these tools kind of push you toward. What is the things you need to interact with? And what are the attributes on those things? And who interacts with them? And like, it's kind of interesting the way the interfaces guide you through that kind of a process.
Right. Like it forces you to be creative to really ask yourself, what is the most important piece here? And what is the problem that we're trying to solve? Like I think about 4 years ago when our good friend Justin, who comes up on this podcast a lot,
all the time,
approached us with this idea of like, we want to do WizTutor, which is like an on-demand tutoring service. And at the time, we were literally trying to build Uber for tutors. And when I say literally, I mean like we wanted to have a map.
Literally.
And
yeah.
like a car that shows up on this map in real time and would tell you when the tutor, like where the tutor is. It sounds crazy as I say this out loud because that sounds so ridiculous and like not even relevant to like the core business product. But we wanted to have a car that like if I'm a student and I'm booking a tutor, I get to see as soon as that tutor confirms where their car is and where it is like en route to me as a student who is being tutored by them. And like, I just think about how silly that is and how that was like the core, like this is the most important thing that we need to do and we need to make this feature work. And I think about like, if we were boxed in to this environment of low code, no code, and we were, and all we were presented with was like, hey, we have bubble.io, go make this app. I guarantee you, we would have found very creative ways to accomplish the same thing and like potentially more effectively and closer to the actual problem that we were trying to solve, which I think is like
a really like where we ended up as a company, we would have gotten there a lot faster, I think. And so like there's kind of three main categories. There's this like full codeless stack, which is like at the end of the day you're gonna have an app that you log into that's your own app on your domain. So like Bubble, AppSheet, Glide, the pitch there is that you're gonna build johnsairbnb.com and you're gonna knock it out and it looks like your app. That's the whole pitch there. So no one knows that you've built on Bubble. That's the pitch there. But then there's this whole category of kind of internal tool replacements. So these are kind of like I was saying, Salesforce or FileMaker clones, and that's like Airtable, Retool. I would say even Notion's in this category where you can build like simple apps with your own kind of data. You're moving through a workflow. And then there's this whole other area, which we haven't touched yet, which is domain-specific codeless. This is my favorite and the one I think I'm most bullish on, which means like, if you're going to build an e-commerce website, like don't just use Shopify and extend what Shopify has as a core. Or, for example, a marketplace app. If we were building WizTutor tomorrow, I would literally sign up for ShareTribe, customize ShareTribe, and ship it. Because that's what it does. Like their entire business is built on like, okay, you want to build a marketplace for recording studios to like list their studio time and have people book it or whatever, a surfboard borrowing network. Like that's actually all they do. And they specialize around just the tooling needed for marketplace apps. There's tons of these, you know, paid communities is Mighty Networks. And when I think about it, like I was very involved in two big startups. One was WizTutor, we talk about all the time, which literally could have just run on ShareTribe. We could have gotten the whole proof of concept spun up, even the first few hundred users, just using ShareTribe. And the second is WellStart Health. And in reality, in hindsight, it's pretty much just a paid community. That was the main core feature that people were signing up for, and like some online courses. And like literally it would have been Mighty Networks, which is paid communities, and Podia, which is for online courses. Just those two things together, and that's WellStart Health. And we could have gotten the proof of concept, and maybe even for the first few rounds of funding and first thousands of users, just those two things without taking all that time to validate and build the wrong things. So like, I'm actually more and more excited about this and feel like if I was to start a new startup tomorrow, V1, I may or may not write code. It's hard though, because, you know, we can talk through some of the downsides because I think to some degree, I might be even slower in some of these because I'm just so efficient writing code that it's like, I don't even know if a WYSIWYG tool would help me. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts so far?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like if you're not trying to do something like the next TikTok, like I can't imagine you could build TikTok on one of these tools.
No.
I mean, maybe you can, maybe you can't.
You could, but yeah, if you're trying to innovate on user experience at all, and like that's very much in like the social, like you're going to need the instant load times. The performance of these apps is abysmal. Like you're talking like at least more than a second load times on most screens. The performance is abysmal on this stuff, as you would imagine it would be. Mm-hmm. Like a Webflow page, like they rarely load quick sometimes, but come on.
Okay, I have a follow-up question then, and maybe this segues us into the upsides and downsides of low code.
Yeah.
Is my biggest question as someone who's literally kind of just hearing about this today, or this is not the first time I'm hearing about it, but it's the first time I'm like talking about it out loud.
Going
and
in
discussing
deep on it.
It.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Andrew.
How would you debug something? And is that a problem because you're working with these abstractions over like actual code, right? And you would imagine that those things are like well tested. But like inevitably something's going to go wrong. Some piece of data is going to go, is going to be malformed somewhere in the pipeline, right? Mm-hmm. Potentially. How do you debug something like that if you don't have the means to just like go in Heroku console and see what went wrong?
The short answer is it's almost like a type system in that the system forces you into a very articulate data structure and you have to align with the platform's data model. It's almost like asking, how do you debug Notion? It's like, well, you have unexpected results, but it's not necessarily a bug. Like let's say you're doing some kind of formula in Notion or in Excel. Yeah, you're getting unexpected results, but there's not necessarily anything technically breaking because there's no code to break. So the first thing is like it forces you into their abstractions in such ways that it's really hard to create bugs. Like actual 500 errors don't really happen because you're forked structure done. Now, unintended behavior or unintended consequences abound everywhere. So like let's say you store a phone number as a text field and now you're trying to do something with that phone number, like send Twilio to it, but then all of a sudden you have an A in your text field and you're trying to send that to Twilio, you're going to have all types of errors. Now, these different systems do those types of things differently. And again, like there's a spectrum of how flexible these platforms are with how rigid they are. But Bubble, for example, let's say you set up a data table, you have a user's data table and you have an attribute on there called phone, and that is a string, then you set up a workflow to like send some type of an SMS to them. That workflow will say, hey, there's an error here. Your data type on phone attribute is wrong, and it will guide you through that. So like the short answer is the interface turns red and it kind of lets you know that, hey, this is probably not what you want to do. And if you try to delete a column that an interface is referencing, it will warn you about that and say, hey, if you delete this column here, this other user screen will break. And it's surprisingly really good. Like, I feel like I wish I had some of that in Rails to kind of help me in some ways to prevent me from getting shot in the foot. But at the same time, it's incredibly tedious. Like, I just want to write a fucking migration and add a data type and like drop in some HTML. But instead, I'm like clicking 1,000 checkboxes and like clearing a bunch of errors. And it's like a total nightmare. But if you're not a coder, it's like, oh, I know exactly what's going on here. And if I just click through these dialogues, it will solve it, which is pretty cool. And Some of them like are doing kind of a little bit of AI. Like you start adding data and then it detects the data types you're adding into that field. So it's like, oh, you're putting emails here. Do you want us to convert these fields to email? And it's like, yeah. And then it builds in all the validation. So there's a lot going on that's really, really interesting that I feel like as a software community, we should be looking at. Like thinking about how could Rails be more like a low-code, no-code tool in some ways. I don't want my framework to be this smart, okay? But maybe a little more magic in some ways wouldn't be a bad thing.
I mean, some developer had to build that feature in that says, like, hey, you put an A in the phone number field. Like, that is just, like, more... That is some developer who worked on this low-code, no-code tool who wrote code to make this tool do that.
It's crazy. Yeah. And it's interesting, though, because, like, at a certain point... That breaks down very quickly. Like that very reason what makes low code so easy and error free also completely ties you to their data model. Like you can only have data types and columns that they're defining. You can't just throw JSON in a column and then like do crazier shit with it. You might be able to hack it and figure it out. And like let's get into a little bit of the downsides. Like maintenance can be a total nightmare because you get unintended behavior and you don't own your stack and it's almost impossible to debug. However, it does kind of give you a seatbelt and prevent you from shooting yourself in the foot. It's really, really expensive to scale, but I guess it's still cheaper than hiring a team of devs. Mm-hmm. Like if you think about it that way, it's probably way cheaper than hiring a team of devs. But also it's very ideal for like very basic CRUD things. Create, read, update, destroy. If you're trying to completely reinvent a new data type and a new interface paradigm, it's not going to be the way you do it. You know, like there's so many gotchas on this stuff. Like if you wanted to, let's say, structure a PDF and then email it to a user, like good luck. What you're going to have to do is like throw data to an if this then that endpoint and like find some API conversion service, pay the dollar per conversion, and then like somehow get that back to your app and send it out. You can do it. You absolutely can solve any problem you run into. Like you can figure it out. But at the same time, like you're structuring your low code app with all of these different like Zapier hooks with all these different services. And it's just a house of cards. And you end up with like compromise after compromise after compromise. And it's like, okay, is it a problem with Zapier? Is it a problem with the PDF generating service? Is it a problem with the SendGrid hook that sends out the email? And like, woo, debugging that stuff can be an absolute clusterfuck.
Yeah. This this kind of reminds me of Iterable. Now tell me if Iterable, as I've described it to you before, is like low code, no code. And so for those
I mean, it's on the spectrum. I would say it's like it plugs into the low code, no code ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And I'll let you explain what it is in a second. In the same way that like Stripe can plug into the low code, no code ecosystem, or if this then that, or Zapier can plug into that ecosystem. But yeah, Iterable, let's talk through that. It's like one of these other things that can plug into this low-code, no-code ecosystem.
Right, so what Iterable is basically it's a marketing tool, or yeah, it's a tool that gives marketing people like superpowers. So if I want to subscribe a user to a newsletter and I want to send them like a series of emails, basically, given like the different states that the user could be in. So like, let's say a user signs up for a newsletter. 3 days later, I want them to get sent this email. If they clicked on this button on the website, send them this email instead. And you basically create paths for this user who subscribed to go down, and you send them a different series of emails based on some given parameters, right? And so When you actually take a look at what this looks like as a person who's creating these flows, is it's this like giant mind map looking thing where there's boxes and arrows, and sometimes the boxes mean like sometimes the lines to those boxes mean one thing, sometimes they mean another thing. And that's what I think about when I think about low code, no code, because I've jumped into one of these flows created by people who are non-technical, and I'm just like, this is like code on screen, like mind map diarrhea, right? Because like
mind map diarrhea, and all the back ends of these systems all look exactly that way.
Got it.
Mind map diarrhea, and like one of those little bubbles with an arrow to it represents the PDF processing endpoint, and the next bubble with an arrow represents Twilio SMS hook, and it's like, what the fuck is happening here? And like, it's crazy, but. Back to this idea of like what it's good for. If you're just trying to figure out a proof of concept and get some first users, or you're trying to solve a problem with like your church group, like if you've ever thought about like, you know, our company just kind of needs an app for this, dude, low code, no code all the way. Like don't learn to code to figure out your first version. And, you know, in a way, if you think about a tool like I'm trying to remember the name of it off the top of my head, but there's tons of these. InVision is the one I'm thinking of, where you can create like a clickable prototype. And that is like a really powerful thing for people to create clickable prototypes that they can like start to figure out what an app looks like. But low-code, no-code is even more powerful because it lets you kind of add shit to that and start to interact with the shit. And so it's like it's taking that to another degree and a force multiplier. Here's the thing that like freaks me out, okay? In a way, a Rails app is on the spectrum of doing this. Because like if I think about a production Rails app that I'm even my agency was charging tens of thousands of dollars to build, right? In a way, I'm building on top of libraries, hooking together APIs, and like really leveraging a lot of Rails magic to like make shit happen. That's way more legitimate software development, but I understand why people kind of point to Rails and be like, well, that's not real software development. Because I'm looking at low-code, no-code saying, quote, that's not real software development because you're just stringing shit together with spaghetti on screen. But it's like, undeniably, I don't know. I am so conflicted on this whole thing. Like, a part of me hates it. A part of me is really excited about it. It's so strange.
Wow, that's really funny. But I mean, like, when you think about, you know, kids these days that are, like, learning how to program and stuff, like, the first thing...
The kids these days.
You know, no, I'm talking about, like actual kids in, like, elementary school and, like...
Sure, like a 12-year-old right now in Swift Playground or using Scratch or whatever.
Right. Like, those tools... Like, Scratch, I think, is one of those tools where you, like, literally drag and drop, like, little pieces of a puzzle and it, like, teaches you if-else condition... Like, how to do an if-else and, like, how to do for loops.
Visually if-else. Yep.
And so, like, I mean, arguably, that's software development, too. So, in many ways, I think low-code, no-code is definitely in that, like, spectrum of, like, you are writing code. It's just, like, not in the form of words.
Yeah. It's hard, because it feels icky. But I also think if we embrace it in the right ways, you know, there's a time and a place for it. I think it can be a force multiplier in the same way that there's no reason to sit and try to figure out send and receive of email, like... Go integrate with SendGrid. There's no reason to reinvent payments. Like, nobody is trying to figure out PCI compliance on their own app and, like, handle that on their own. You're gonna fucking use Stripe. So I think if we have an open mind to some of these low-code, no-code solutions, I think there's a world in which it can really be a force multiplier and really help things get kickstarted. I think it, obviously, for, like, prototyping and validation, like, this is an incredible tool. Like, the next time some founder comes to me, it's like, how much do I need to save to create my version one of my app? It's like, don't save any, like, start saving, but, like, also just start, still go start building it. Bubble starts at, like, $30 a month. Go sign up for Bubble and just start figuring it out. Like, I think that's really powerful.
Let me ask you this, because you're kind of approaching it from someone who knows how to code. You know you already know the building blocks, the high-level building blocks to build a program, which is like, you know, if-else's and for loops and, you know, branching conditional logic. So you can jump into something that's basically a mind map diarrhea thing, and you can hack something together because your brain already thinks that way. So going to a tool like Bubble might already be familiar to you in a sense, because like it's a different programming language, but a programming language nonetheless. So my question to you is, how difficult do you think this would be for someone who's completely non-technical, and do you think that there is like a bear, like there's like a learning curve that you have to get over? You have to like get over that initial hump.
Yes, because I've had people like tell me that Squarespace is too hard to use. Like, come on. Like, of course there's a fucking spectrum of what people can handle and not, but I think you touch on something there that's really interesting, which is the biggest gotcha of low code no code to me is that it doesn't fix the hardest part of software development. Like, there is a huge barrier for people of looking at the white text on the black screen, like opening terminal, that people just won't do. I, of course, try to encourage people to do that all the time and just like start writing code. It's not actually that threatening. No one's going to die by writing bad code here. Like, just write terminal. But that barrier of opening terminal and looking at plain text on a screen is really, really high for people. And I sympathize with that. But at the same time, these low-code, no-code tools don't fix the hard part of software. What's the hard part of software? Like, understanding the needs and workflow, defining the data requirements and domain structure, building a product that users actually want, finding those users, like keeping a system running at scale. Like, all those things are way, way harder than actually writing Ruby code. Like, even as a full-time developer, you only spend, what, 70% of your time writing code? Like, at most. The rest of it is like managing stakeholders, figuring out what to build and how to build it. And low code, no code doesn't fix that. And especially as like when you're either in a startup or working as more of an engineering manager, you're only spending half your time coding because you're just trying to figure out what the fuck to build. And like actually getting something on the screen and making an API call, it's not hard in 2020. It's not hard to take money and process money, but it's really hard to figure out what to build, who wants that, and like what needs to be built next. But yeah, there's also a huge learning curve to this stuff. I'm not going to say like, because you're not writing code, you'll be able to just do this.
Interesting. Yeah. So do you think that there's going to be...
That's a whole rant.
Do you think that there's going to be less or fewer founders that are like looking for someone to build their MVP knowing that these tools exist?
This trend is already happening. So like there's all of these different kind of communities. So nocode.tech is like a huge community and resource list. And then there's this last one that I want to touch on, which is huge as we wrap this, which is Zero Code with a Q, which is ridiculous. But zerocode.com with a Q. This whole business model is insane. I submit Bubble templates as if they were WordPress themes to Zero Code, and then you as a founder buy my template to start your business.
Wow.
And there's other sites that do this with like Rails starter apps. Yep. Like there's a tons of like this totally exists. And so like that's a legitimate thing. There's React starter apps. I've seen those that it's like, hey, here's a Facebook React starter app. And it's like very close to the Facebook app. It's a good clone. But like this is like a whole nother level of like trying to be very high leverage as a founder, because if you can find the Zero Code framework, and if you look at these templates, it's like, oh my God, like that's so crazy. It's like, okay, here's an Uber template, here's an Airbnb template. So if you are building like the Airbnb for XYZ, like here's Uplance, freelancing like Upwork. And it's a platform that promises to literally have all of Upwork for $747. You can just buy this template. And it's like dozens of screens and domain definitions and Stripe integrations, like Stripe marketplace integrations and emails and like everything, like ready to go build your own freelancing platform.
Wow.
And it's so like when you think about it in terms like that, it's like it actually really gets you started. And it's hard to deny that this is not a great way to start. It has messaging built in, it's got payments built in, notifications. The only like last thing I'll say is none of these let you ship something to the App Store. These are all going to be web app based. Obviously, I think people listening to that would understand that. But I think that's the last thing to kind of check out. It's like, wow, like this is actually a very deep and rapidly growing resource. And we're at the very beginning of this. Like this is like 3 or 4 years into this even existing as a world. And it's just going to continue to gain traction, I think, for like especially for early stage startups. Like this is the way to do it, man.
Okay, so you kind of touched on something that I was about to ask you, is do you think this is a trend or do you think that this is here to stay?
Here to stay, absolutely. And I hate it and love it that this is here to stay. I have such mixed feelings about this shit because I love code. And I don't think in any way this stuff is ever going to replace us as software developers. Like if you give this another 10 years even for performance and AI and all that to get better, there'll still be edge cases. And there's still someone to maintain and fix these things. It's like someone's got to build this shit and there's only going to be more of these things to build and maintain. So these things have so many limits that you push up against, but I think it's amazing for getting spun up and like starting to find the limits of your software. And then you can like know exactly where you need to build. I've kind of have this thing in the company I work with now, which is we have this idea of build where it hurts. Like we're going to build where our users really need things. We're not just going to build things that sounds interesting to us. We're going to build where it hurts from a business standpoint. And to get there, we're going to bridge the gap with off the shelf tools or partner integrations or no code in sometimes. Like at the moment right now, one of our core feature sets, like the back end, we didn't set up our own API integrations. We set up one integration to Zapier and we let Zapier do all these partner integrations. And that's working at scale in the software, the startup I'm in right now. And if we would have tried to do all of the different API integrations instead of letting Zapier do it for us, it would have taken us another month to launch. And there's no reason to do that. Zapier's already written them. So I don't know. It's definitely here to stay and growing. And I mentioned GPT-3, which is a new AI framework. There's people doing demos of GPT-3 where you can describe an interface in plain English it's writing React code.
I've seen
And this. So once that starts to come together more with this codeless stuff to do things like error checking and data recognition, like it's only going to get more powerful. And that I'm excited about. I really want to try this stuff in 3 or 4 years even and see where it's at. I think it's going to be really fucking cool.
Yeah.
But also, I hate it. Long live Ruby. Long live Rails.
There's probably going to be a demo of someone creating a new JavaScript framework by describing it with
this, oh God.
with this GPT-3 thing.
You're so right. Anyway, I think that pretty much wraps it. Do you have any final thoughts on Zero Code? I feel like I talked this whole episode. I had so many thoughts on it.
This was good. I have a prediction, though, and I think that this will be a funny little time capsule to see how right my prediction is. But I predict that initially I was like, nah, this is just a trend. In 5 years, this won't be here. But I actually think in 4 to 5 years, what you'll be seeing is that we're going to be seeing a combination of like low code, no code with code. So like you might have something like a bubble, and I don't know if this already exists, but I want to say that they're going to start opening the platform up in such a way that developers can like send webhooks, so that like it's not just a tool for non-technical people. Like you can bring in technical people onto the platform and have your app hook into some external API. Now, what I imagine a world where you have a low-code, no-code solution that's talking to like a serverless thing like AWS Amplify, or I think that's a I think that's a serverless thing. Netlify Lambda functions. And so like you might have this world where you have fully functioning apps that are mostly low code, no code, that are like sending webhooks to your like AWS Amplify and doing like quote unquote like business logic-y things, and seeing this like weird combination of the thing where you don't have like a GitHub repository anymore. You have a code that's defined, like a code base that's defined by these like apps and services that you log into, which is kind of weird, because like my question then becomes like, how do you organize business logic, and how do you like write? Do you need to write tests? And because tests to me are like documentation, and so it's like,
how do you even manage uptime and downtime? Like, how do you even know if your app crashes? Like,
right. Yeah.
And I have so many questions.
So many questions.
It's interesting, and I think what you're touching on is like why it's just getting my attention again, which is like the idea of having an open API to the back end of these tools. So like, oh shit, like you can build your first version, but the API is completely open. So I can actually like read that data and do things with it and extend it. And so, but we're just barely getting in that world in terms of like extending the low code, no code tool with actual developer tools. Like that's really interesting. I think the other thing that's interesting too is if you think about, and I don't remember it off the top of my head, but there is a couple of these headless CMS frameworks that worked in React that spin up the CMS interface in your React code. And I'm trying to think of, I think it's Sanity that does that. It's not hosted. And I think there's a world in which the app builder is built into your framework in a way that could be really, really fucking cool. Because then you could override and extend like the app building framework. But that's like a whole nother world, which I think is a really interesting next step for this stuff, which is like bringing it from this like cloud service you use, which is like bringing it, actually bringing some of the shit into your framework to make you more exponential as a developer. It's like, what happens if you push the idea of types like completely to the extreme and like add a service layer? It's like, wow, like it's actually, you could make yourself a lot more productive as a developer in some ways. And in some ways, it's really ugly. All right, let's go into some picks. I think that's it for low code, no code for this week. Do you have any picks for us this week, JP?
Yeah, my pick is a pick that I think I picked a long time ago that you almost picked last episode, which is this GitHub repository, which I just felt was appropriate. And it's this guy, Kelsey Hightower. It's this repository called No Code, and it has something like a 43,000 stars. And obviously it's like a parody repository. And all it is it's literally no code. And it's like this framework of like no code. And it gives you examples of what this looks like, which is just like a blank box and other examples, which are just more blank boxes. And I think it's really funny and very apropos.
Yeah, there's two things that I love about this. It's really funny. It's this repo. You got to click on the link and check this out if you haven't seen it. But I'm looking at the open pull requests against this and the issues against it, and it's all just bad programming jokes. Like, there's an open pull request for a CIA backdoor, and there's an open pull request for SAS support. And there's literally nothing in this repo. There's a Docker file. Someone 3 years ago added Docker support by adding a Docker file into here. And it just kills me. That's like so great. I love this repo. And it's always a good reminder of like, yeah, the most reliable code you can write is none. So if you can solve this without code, maybe that's the way to do it. My pick this week is one that I was loosely familiar with, but I hadn't dug into, which is the Chrome Lighthouse audit that lives within the Chrome developer tools. So if you want to understand your, at a very high level, your web application's performance and like issues or like problems, Lighthouse is really fucking cool. It just runs this big test. It tries it a bunch of different devices. And then it tells you stuff like accessibility, whether your contrast ratio is too low, your performance, your SEO score. It's like a lot. And I was like, wow, this like gives me clear action steps to improve my SEO. Because I was trying to do some SEO audits against some pages. And I was like, I know some best practices, but what are some other audits I can do here? And it's a really cool tool. If you haven't played with Lighthouse, like go start. And it's interesting too to run it against some huge websites like Airbnb or Amazon and like see how much performance doesn't actually matter all that much. Mm-hmm. If you really are solving, like I'm running it on huge websites that are famous and it's like they're getting a 34 on their performance score.
Wow.
And I see all the time like React devs and Rails devs like so proud of their 99 or 100 Lighthouse score. It's like maybe it's not that important. I don't know. But it's really interesting. It's a pretty cool tool.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hold on. Before we hang up, I need to know what your first score was when you ran against like one of your
63.
Sites. Okay, that's not terrible. I think that's like
my SEO though was 30.
Oh.
Yeah, and now I'm above 90 on all. I'm like, all right, cool. I think I was maybe like 89 on the performance still. I have some other stuff I want to do in terms of like removing some unused CSS and some other things, but I'm getting there. It's web fonts. Fucking kill you, man. If you use more than like two or three web fonts, like you're screwed.
Mm. At least it's in one of those things that like once you know how to fix it, it's kind of like getting the like sent via SendGrid. Like as long like once
away you, from the email. Yeah,
yeah. Like once you know how to fix it, it's like a very clear thing. But until then, it's just like I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Low Code, No Code. To learn more about the show, you can go to iterationpodcast.com. And there you can find actually JP and I's Twitter handles. We'd love to hear from you guys. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next episode.
See ya.